I also, before this meeting, consulted a number of times with the leadership of all formations within CBUT affiliated formation, together with the general student through a mass meeting, constituent meeting at CBUT. So what I'm going to be presenting here today is what they've given me, as what they call the mandate-taking, mandate-giving. So my presentation, I will be talking about NSFAS payment for 2020, residencies, corruption, campus shutdown, and chaos suspension of student leaders, and unlawful arrest. So when we talk about NSFAS, as the latter speaker alluded, indeed we did receive over 155 million in total in January 31st. Our upfront payment was confirmed to be over 126 million, and then there was an additional payment on the 28th of February, which amounts to over 29 million. So I'll now be talking about the residences, and when I talk about residences, I'm talking about the conditions of those residences as well. We've got crisis of maintenance in our residences. Residences such as Casefield, St. Peter's, MGR, and JNB, and many other residences as well. The conditions are unbearable. I actually attended, I think over the last 2 weeks, a gathering invited by the former Minister of Finance, Comrade Malus Kikap. He visited us last year when we were doing our door-to-door campaign for SRC elections, and he saw the condition which we lived in, which is what we did not invite him to do that. He invited him to assist us on campaign. He made comments in the gathering which we have at UCT, saying that, reflecting what he saw at CBUT last year, he confirmed in front of everyone that something needs to be done about CBUT residences, particularly when it comes to maintenance. It's unbearable. There's no conditions that can accommodate students. I mean, you can't even walk towards the seat. It's broken, the old building are delivered, you know. And also the issue of insufficient residences for deserving students, including students whom are appealing. And there's categories when we're talking about students who are appealing. There are students who are failing for the first time, whom are also appealing, but their spaces were taken away while they were undergoing the process of appealing. Well, I heard the latter speaker talking about students whom don't meet the criteria now, but that's just, you know, a part of the students which are also needs residences. But our focus is on students who are deserving, who miss the criteria, and students who came to university for the first time. They also sleep outside. And the issue of private boarding procedure and regulations, which is something that we would like the CBUT management to take it seriously, because it speaks of remedial action to address the status quo when it comes to residencies. That if they can take it seriously and make sure that they have the necessary document as required by the DHET to accredit and to make sure that those beds becomes available for students who are sleeping outside. That is something that we have been waiting for management to assist us with. But up until today, we have been find an amicable solution to that regard. And my other item which I'm going to speak on is the issue of corruption, what now you call the prima facie evidence which we have against the management. Approximately the 32 million which the latter speaker spoke about, well, I will leave it to the House to go through the investigation, but on our side, what we can say is that we suspect a corruption in that regard, that we can't just talk about over 1,000 students who are still have bank details issues, students who have not signed NPA, students, there's just so many students who haven't received the allowances, and if you look at the numbers, one will become worried. How come so many students experiencing such a problems. And I would have thought maybe it was in the best interest if we were to see as SRC were co-governing with the institution to provide us with that information. For example, the names. Because it's easy to talk about the numbers and say it's 10 people, but when you actually see the name, we actually see a different story. So it's difficult to argue that one. It's just something that is written, so which we need backup evidence. And also the issue of during a strike, which student populace complain about, is that why every time when we going to on a strike, there's all of a sudden a militarization of securities in campus. And there's also allegation that there are some of executive management who are benefiting from that process of strike through corruption, which I'm going to talk about in the next slide, which I'm going to right now. And we have issues of students without their any sort of allowances till to date. And our worry is that those students, is again, it's a cycle, it's going to affect them in their academic life. Because it's difficult to study with an hungry stomach. It's difficult to focus, and the student can't meet their needs. And the process of dispersing this allowance to students is quite slow as compared to other universities. And another issue which prevailed now in these gatherings is the monopoly of one transport company called SG Buses, that since 2002 there has not been a competition to this company. It has been a single company that provides buses for our institution, and allegation is that some of the management again are benefiting through these tenders, and they sort of captured the institution. The Vita Scholar, having relations with some of the management within the institution, which one of those management is Professor Moll, that he is the one who is in charge of deploying those securities in company, with an allegation that he is benefiting from it. I'm going to talk about suspension of student leaders and unlawful arrest. We have a number of SRC leaders currently served with suspension, unfounded allegations. And also the intimidation of students within our campuses and victimize. Personally on this one, I received a call on one single night on this one of being victimization by securities from the Secretary General of the Central SRC. He called me and he told me that he has just been pepper sprayed by securities on campus. And I asked why, and she says to me, she had not been carrying a student card with her, and they are now demanding student cards, and if you don't have student card, they deal with you. So he called me immediately on this one. And there was a particular day as well on this one. I was in campus. I had to speak with the leaders of student structures, but I arrived ill on campus because I wanted to see what was going on in the previous night. I found then of securities going around campus, and there were two students working inside campus towards the other building, student center. And they were summoned by these securities with so much arrogance and intimidation, asking for student cards as well. So I experienced this twice. And I went there to ask as to why now demanding student cards, where was this communicated? Because as SRC, we have not been informed that now we must inform our constituencies that when they are working around campus, they now must carry student card. So it's difficult for us to answer when they are asking that question. They couldn't give us an answer, but we managed to set those students free from those securities. The unlawful arrest of students. I attended a meeting at Belleville campus at a particular day when the process began. And I was unaware that that day there's going to be a protest on campus. But what I experienced is an unlawful arrest of students. Some of the students were just sitting on and parking and talking with other students. Those security guards would just come and arrest them and take them, put them in the van and hide them in some of those buildings where no one will see where they are. The campus shutdown and chaos. There is no stability in our campus, which is partly why we decided to convene a meeting and try to pave a way forward as SRC with structures and student populace. And our argument was that we should take the matter to Parliament for intervention to assist us to actually resolve the current issues in our campus. To assist us, if need be, with investigation from these allegations that are happening in our campus. To also assist us, if possible, to root out corruption in our campus. And also give us remedial action to all our demands which were submitted before the Parliament. So it's safe to say, in conclusion, the campus remains shut, students are not attending classes. The Central SRC, together with local SRC and affiliated structures and all formation within campus, we will work together to try and find an amicable solution. We will continue to meet on a daily basis to engage on our issues outside this Parliament and outside other platforms where they are uncomfortable to discuss their issues. So my presentation ends there, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, President of the SRC. I think you did justice to the time allocated, succinct, clear, to the point. We're going to ask NSFAS to just briefly talk to us as we always do. Invite NSFAS just to talk to us about the status of the disbursement. and other issues. You can pick up that one of the key issues around that is there, the universities around NSFAS allocation and disbursement. So, Prof.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members, delegations from CPUT. Allow me quickly to introduce our delegation. I will be very brief because in most cases the numbers that were presented, we are in agreement with it. I might just make one or two clarifications. So I myself am the administrator of NSFAS, the executive administrator. Allow me to introduce a newcomer to NSFAS, Dr. Sibonginiseni Tsotetsani. She started a month ago, and I just want to quickly explain to members her background, very, very, very quickly. She's from rural Makanda in Eastern Cape. She's got a PhD in information systems, majoring in big data and analytics from UCT. She's got extensive international experience. She's worked with Google Incorporated in San Francisco. She's got more than 24 years in ICT sector. She serves in the Presidential Commission on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And if there is time, she will present the status of the ICT infrastructure at NSFAS. I don't think we will have time, but I'm sure where we will find the time to give the members the assurance that we are taking the ICT infrastructure improvement very seriously. So we're very pleased to have a very highly talented lady, and the reason for joining NSFAS is because she wants to do something for the country. So I ask my other two colleagues to introduce themselves.
Morning, members. My name is Fongile Mnwabe.
Morning, members.
Sorry.
Sorry, Chair.
That's an introduction.
Apologies, Chair and members. My name is Fongile Mnwabe, advisor to Executive Administrator. I'm responsible for stakeholder and communication. Thank you.
Okay. Now that's a proper introduction.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Sivuyile Chiula, and I'm the manager in the administrator's office.
Okay. So, thank you, Chair. We have made the two submissions. One is the fact sheet, as we normally do when we come to Parliament of the different universities. And we indeed have the fact sheet of CPUT in here, and the fact sheet normally contains the amounts disbursed and the times at which they were disbursed, the applications that we received, walk-in applications, and a whole list of information. So we present this to the Vice-Chancellors as well so that they can have an updated list of our statistics that we have with the institution. And then when there are differences, we would then, of course, reconcile such differences. The other presentation is the presentation of the ICT infrastructure, but I don't think it's pertinent at the moment. I'll be guided by you, Chairperson, as to whether there's time to present that. But just to remind members that the process of funding students really starts with when NSFAS declares students eligible. That it happens during the application season from September to November every year, and last year indeed in 2019 we attracted something like 550,000 applicants. Of course, as we found in prior years, there's a need for walk to cater for no walk-in students in the beginning of the year, and mostly that walk-in students are from TVETs, and in this year we had 120,000 walk-ins and about from TVETs and 20,000 from universities. So the VC has referred to the 880 manual applications. I suspect that 880 manual applications indeed do come from walk-ins. Also, the fact that they have not fully enrolled yet, they are still at 91%, means that we can still expect further walk-ins to be processed. So as we deal with other institutions, when we do encounter issues or protests pertaining to NSFAS or differences in statistics, we normally invite the management of the institution as well as the SRC members to our offices in Cape Town, and then I would normally then spend 2 or 3 days working through those differences. And we find that type of engagement to work particularly well. We've had examples like KZN University. Ford Air was there a few times, Western Cape, University of Western Cape, TUT, and so on. And as was the case in this case, I actually did indeed call the Vice-Chancellor when I became aware that there could potentially be for NSFAS contributing to the current stalemate and unrest at CPUT. I did speak to the VC and made a similar invitation to the VC. I would just like to add that we were approached directly by the CPUT students, and the allegations that they brought to us is that they were told that NSFAS did not pay the institution. And we find this to happen quite often, where frontline staff tell the students that NSFAS did not pay the institution. And we showed them that we actually did pay the institution, and the figures that were shown here are actually the correct figures of the disbursements that happened to CPUT. And it so happened that on the day of that they were coming there, we also had a press conference with the Deputy Minister, and these questions were raised, and I did tell the media that we had paid over the amounts that you saw here. But I want to make it very clear that NSFAS never alluded to any fact that money is gone or that there is any money that is being stolen. Just in case, I just want to put that on the table. So, just to do two clarifications, yes, the appeals that from the continuing students is in the domain of CPUT, because we receive that data from CPUT once the appeals committees have sat, and as they've indicated, they will submit that to us on the 20th of March. We will then process that, and where appropriate, we will reinstate those students for funding if the appeals were successful. As I referred to the manual applications of 880, I suspect there will still be more coming. But we are processing that at a rapid speed because we do realize that students, although they apply late, they have the same expectations of students that applied early to get their funding on time. I also want to point out that the Minister and myself were in a meeting on the CSR somewhere in January. I think it was the 20th of January, where we made concessions with regards to accommodation. We realize that one national norms and standards will not be applicable to the universities across the country because the conditions vary across the country so dramatically. And we certainly know that for rural and township campuses, you can't apply a national norms and standards. We have therefore asked institutions to develop norms and standards that are applicable to the institution and taking cognizance of the local conditions, but that those norms and standards must be conducive to academic success, and that we must make also between ourselves, which is NISFAS, and the university management and the SRCs, make sure that there's no room for exploitation or abuse of students. So I thought that with those few remarks, Chair, I would rather step back and give sufficient time for the members to engage the issues at hand. So I will stop here at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much, Prof. I hope members have been taking notes. Please, let's straight to the point, because we shouldn't be like the last time when we had other guests where we spoke and there was little time for guests to respond. So, but just before we go to the members, I'm worried about the allowance for, is it for transport, a total of 65 million will be paid to students in April as monthly living allowance and backdated transport allowance. Why in April now no allowance has been paid? Just at a go, we're going to pay 65 million. What are the reasons for that? If maybe we can get an explanation there. 1,986 students have failed the bank verification, meaning that the account is invalid or the ID number does not match the recipients. This is quite a big number. What has been done to help the students? Because it's one thing to say there is a problem, but if the student is NSFAS funded student, surely there must be some effort by management to try and help the students' record to be in order. There must be a dedicated resource that makes sure that all the accounts is in order so that the student can receive the allowance. So this number is quite big. There's 32 million all in all that is still outstanding to be paid to students. 32 million is quite a significant amount for allowances. Remember, allowances are not huge amounts, small amounts to help the students to to cope at the university. Transport allowance, meal allowance, whatever allowance that is. Now, if it accumulates to a point where it even becomes 32 million, does that not concern management? Especially in view of all the problems that are there. The complaint, maybe this is the amount that the student thinks that is unaccounted for, is missing, has been lost, and all of that. Is this something that does not concern management? That students don't get their allowances on time? It is not with NSFAS sitting with management and it can't be taken to the student. Surely this must be a cause for concern. Okay, and then just something that I would like, because I saw that the person is also here. One thing that has been raised here, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but it's something that worried me. On the memorandum that we received from the student leadership, there is a person, the Dean of Students, I think she is here, who has been accused of or who said that she was fired from Wits University for gross misconduct and incapacity. Just as a factual situation, is that the case? Yes or no? Yes, I'm asking you, but you're going to respond now. Just note the questions so that when it's time, then you can respond. It's one of the many issues, but as I said, the other issues, let's rather have, but members can raise them, but I think it's necessary that we have a comprehensive response so that we can have a follow-up. I think we can give council 7 days to meet and to look at this memorandum by the students and then to respond to us if members agree with that. Okay, can I get the hands? Honorable Mananiso, Mams Bia, maybe let's just, yeah, and then Honorable Gietze. Honorable Ngogo, you don't want to say anything today. You're fine, okay.
I'm coming back.
All right, sure. Okay, Honorable Mananis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome all the presentation made today and as well want to add that on some of the issues you have covered me. You know, every time I always say it is difficult to be chaired by you because we would have issues jotted down, but when you want to raise, at least you could have covered us. However, one thing that I think that we need to say in this committee is the issue of lack of leadership and management in terms of showing remorse to the student. At times when we speak this issue of NSFAS, it's as if students are only interested to get allowances, you know. We don't see issues of education being the center of whatever that they are fighting for. And I think we are really failing them as this country because we haven't apologized by failing them every day. The other thing that is so disappointing, Chairperson, with regards to the presentation from the university is the fact that they didn't speak more about issues that young people have been raising, these issues of infrastructure. I mean, we are here to assist them and, you know, speak on their behalf, on their absence, advocating for funding and so on. But if people, they come here and they don't give us the essence of whatever that is happening in their institution, it is very troublesome for us as members of parliament. And other question will go to the student leaders. I think we must tell you as your peers to say somewhere, somehow, you don't actually provide leadership when it's needed. I mean, I believe that most of the issues that are happening in universities, you are being consulted in terms of what is it that's going to happen and so on. But if you are not consulted, therefore I would blame the leadership and management by not taking you seriously. However, I just want to check the cost of damages that has happened through this protest because we don't see that thing coming up. As much as we would want to know what is it that you are doing to ensure that whoever has damaged it actually gets to be arrested so that this thing must not set a precedent that people just damage and then everything gets well. The other thing is with regards to issues of... Is the last?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, my picture.
Let it be the last.
Oh, the other issue is when the student representative was presenting here, he raised the issue of access cards. I mean, for us as parliamentarians, you can't enter here without having an access card. So some of the things we must not use them as excuses, you know, for us to vandalize and being angry. I mean, everybody who access any higher learning institution must produce an access card because you won't be able to know who's there and so on. And fact is that these institutions are actually people who are supposed to be accessing them are those who have been permitted to access. That's a fact. So some of the things leaders, we must go and consult with our members and ensure that we deal with those issues rather than bring them as serious matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you meant student cards that must be carried. That you say must be carried.
Okay. Mam Svia.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. Chairperson, the CSRC is complaining about missing beneficiaries. Is it one and the same thing with the and NSFAS? Always say missing results. Yini yona le? Missing results, missing beneficiaries, outcast. To clear us on that. The other one, on the 27th January up to the 3rd March 2020, all the demands were met. So why manje institution was shut down because all the demands were met? Nivalelani manje bantwana nani? Nishiselani futhi? Thanks.
Okay, Honorable Getsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the three presentation we've got from the university, SRC and NSFAS. One, with regard to the university, I want to check how many applications we have received of the newly, you know, first years this year, vis-a-vis the 7,003 that you have ultimately honored them with admission. Two, perhaps a further explanation on the suspension of student leaders, because the way the Vice Chancellor was explaining, I couldn't grasp what was really happening. I mean, was it because of protests? Were they suspended prior to the protests? Were the protests actually fueled by the fact that student leaders were unfairly suspended? With regard to the students sleeping in the libraries and student center, I think it's very much unfortunate that the Vice Chancellor want to conclude and, you know, that the people who are sleeping in student centers and libraries are primarily those that have been failing and, you know, the ancestors of the university. I don't know what kind of mechanism we have used to arrive to that conclusion to say these are the only people that are sleeping on the student centers and so forth. Because I can tell you now that, you know, it's not only at CPUT where you have this phenomena, you know, this crisis. Mm-hmm. And if you are not going to acknowledge that it's a crisis, you know, generally in the whole South African institution, there's a problem of accommodation of students. And if you are going to, you know, respond to issues the way you want to, then we are going to have a big problem. I can guarantee you that. Yeah, maybe let's get the essence of what is happening in that regard. What kind of mechanism we have used to detect that these are the people who have been failing, as you put it. The next point, it's with regard to, yes, I mean, I hear some of the concerns raised by students to with regard to the securities, and I will tilt on their side, because I think there's always been a call to say universities must internalize and use their own services, from buses, securities, cleaners, and all those kind of things. That is being said precisely because we want to avoid the very same thing these comrades are raising today, these students, of a certain somebody within the Management Executive Committee who have interest. We want to do away with that. We want to check, are there any intentions, perhaps, of insourcing securities and making sure that the securities at CPUT are hired by the university, are paid directly by the university, not only securities, cleaners, and including the bus shuttles. I mean, your first university, they own their buses. Many universities own their buses. Want to check, when are we going to arrive to that particular conclusion for that we avoid so many issues that are being raised? Because the danger we're going to create, and I don't want that, because you are going to mess up with the psychology of student leaders. Because from time to time, some of the genuine issues are going to be diluted in the process because of some of the views you guys have in the Management Executive Committee. I know you are not agreeing, all of you. You are not nails. You are not born by one woman. You will differ. And once that happens, one of you will go and approach the president or anyone in the central SRC to say, here is an issue. I can give you an information. These guys, they are eating and why not eating? It's all about Boroto here. And unfortunately, you will use comrades, students into your own advantage. Not because you care about them, no, but you are fighting your own personal battle with others, those who are regarded as those who are eating, right, the eatists within. We need to address that because it's a big problem, Comrade Chairperson, and I'm sure you would know we cautioned even TUT with regard to this matter of involving students in tender process. I mean, as a student activist sitting like this, I will be very ashamed to go to a protest. And in some of the memorandum, the things that are being flagged and highlighted is the fact that there's a cafeteria tender that was given to someone. And you start internalizing that to say, as a student leader, of course, if the cafeteria is not producing a high-standard nutritious food, then we are going to intervene. But as to who got a tender, that should even be internalized by the university. Student centers must be owned by the university. In fact, it's the SRC that must own student centers because that is a student center. It must primarily be owned by students. It is the SRC and them who must decide what happens with the student center. I think we...
Okay, wrap up.
Yeah, just wrapping up with regard to NSFAS, right, because it's not time. I think thank you very much, Doctor, for bringing three women and yourself alone as a male. And yeah, you were not here the last time I was speaking, but fortunate enough you came, but I'm not going to re-speaking about things that we both know, that every time I speak about NSFAS, what are the issues that I touch. Maybe Chairperson, the doctor must give us a reason why we must continue in keeping him as an administrator of NSFAS, right? A basic reason, he must not be sophisticated. A basic, why must we keep him? Because similar problems are happening that happened under Ngasan, right? When the guy was dismissed.
What problems?
Well, I mean, problems of disbursements of funds being dispersed late, right? And that is happening abroad, Chair. The malfunctioning of the IT system.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
No, but don't do that, Chairperson, because now you are patronizing me, and I think I don't like that. You must allow me to finish my point.
I'm not patronizing you.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you must allow me to finish my point.
Wait, Honorable Gates. Wait, I've been keeping time with everybody. So don't say when I keep time I'm patronizing you. Please conclude your submission so that we can move. We don't have time of explaining.
Doctor, we are not fighting you. You know, we just want the good to come out of you. I'm sure you'd know that. Even when you were adverse, we were never that aggressive. We just want the better things to happen to our students. If you realize, if there was a well-managed IT system, that when we apply, there is a background check if the account numbers, phone numbers, and IDs are aligned before you even give a verdict to a student that you are accepted by NSFAS, so that we avoid all these things. I mean, the reason why we have to apply and the closing of applying NSFAS closes much earlier in the previous year, right? It is because we look at those kind of things so that we avoid the delaying of disbursements of funds, because they compromise these comrades a lot, I can tell you that. I mean, if you don't get your books, and you get book allowance,
okay,
you only get it in
much.
August, you will have a problem. But thank you very much for the limited time we have, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. You see, the reason why I want us to just be, I know that Honorable Gates wants us to have a discussion with NSFAS, and we are. Because we are going to have NSFAS briefing us on their annual performance plan the second week after we come back. So you can raise relevant points. Now, you want to engage, but you are engaging on issues that does not have anything to do with CPUT. You see? That's why I want to cut you off, because you will have a platform to raise those issues about application to NSFAS, the processes and all of that. But today is irrelevant in a sense that we are talking about disbursement of NSFAS to CPUT. And that's why we've invited them here. But otherwise, we will have an engagement second week when we come back. APP, you can talk about anything. Honorable, not Dada, but you didn't raise your hand. Was your hand up?
My hand is up, Chair. Maybe you missed it.
Okay.
Chair, thank you so much. First of all, let me just say that based on the memorandum that we did not receive fine, even though we got a hold of it, I just took a glance at it, Chair. I would advise that that memorandum is directed to, one, the council, as well as yourself as a portfolio committee chairperson. But I think the council must respond to that particular memorandum before we interrogate it. I think what we must interrogate is the report in response to that memorandum. And I want to caution us from getting into detail of that memorandum, because we are a body that is supposed to oversee a particular process being followed by student leadership within the confines of the university itself. Secondly, I think there's extremely poor engagement here. It's either there's extremely poor engagement or someone is lying in the midst. Because management says we've got a 4x4 forum, the SRC and the student leadership saying there's no engagement. So somebody's clearly lying. And, you know, Chair, it's irritating to sit here and you know, we listen to institutions based on the poor communication, the poor engagement, and now we must now interrogate hearsay, and it's really annoying, to be honest with you. But anyways, I'll go into the details. I just wanted to check with the management of the institution itself. And maybe NSFAS will assist me on this. The chair raised the concerns of transport allowances. What is the deal? What was the delay in terms of that, and why are they being paid out so late? Secondly, what are the timelines of concluding the 1,256 NSFAS appeals, so that those are processed from the institution to NSFAS, and when will those be concluded? And maybe, I don't know if you've received any on your end, Doc, and maybe you'll be able to respond to that. The 880 manual NSFAS applications, and I think it's been a problem across the sector, Doc, when will these decisions be made by, you know, and responded to the institutions? You know, if you can give us, what are the possibilities in terms of getting that very quick, and what are the delays in that particular process? The 1,004 students you refer to, who are to be assessed and verified for their private accommodation, who is supposed to do that? What are their timelines? Do they have an MOU in place in terms of being able to do that, so that to mitigate that? The students dispute the spaces of engagement. And I want to ask the SRC, every single institution has what we call management committees, right? There's a tender committee, for example, I'm assuming an institution. Or there's a committee that deals with tenders. And the SRC should be represented there. And I want to check, is the SRC represented there? Do they attend those? Because they're supposed to be a student according to the Act and the statutes of your particular institution to have student representation on that. So I wanted to check that. These 4x4 meetings that the management is referring to, do you attend those? Or do you dispute them? What is the problem in terms of communicating and sitting down and resolving these issues? And I want to get to the bottom of that. I think that's what annoys me the most, Chair, because I want to be able to get what the issue is there. I think in your presentation, VC, you should have attached what the demands are versus your responses, because those could either escalate the conflict, one, or de-escalate the conflict. And I think maybe we should be able to get them. This is prior to what has been submitted now, what you were dealing with in February and stuff like that. Maybe you should have attached that so we can interrogate that. I want to say to the student leadership, it's quite disappointing. On one end, you're talking about maintenance of residences, which the university should answer correctly, what their plan is in terms of maintenance of residences. But then we then again get buildings being burned, cars being torched, and all these other things, which, by the way, delegitimizes your struggle as students. It takes away from, that's what the media is going to cover on. And I want to strongly condemn this thing of burning buildings. Even Kokwenu, if your mother does not have money to give you to go out, you don't burn the house. And it cannot be that you're going to sit there, because nobody's innocent in this thing. You can't sit there and say, no, we're innocent as students. We're, you know, there's a role that you have to play in mitigating this particular challenge. We can't just say the management is there, therefore they must deal with issues, and it's not our problem that the buildings are burnt. You are part of stakeholders in that institution. And therefore you must be able to speak about this thing of students burning buildings or whoever's doing this thing. And I want to check with management. You've got measures in place. You've got security measures in place. By the way, a student card is a security measure in place, and I shouldn't complain about that. Because once somebody who doesn't have a student card goes into campus and rapes one of the students, it becomes a problem. So I wanted to check, what are your security measures to look at who exactly is doing this torching of buildings, which is, by the way, costing the state more money rather than maintaining already existing buildings, and what consequence management have you put in place? The student leaders that have been alleged to be suspended, what have you suspended any of those leaders, and has due process been followed in terms of that? My last 2 points, Chair, is that has the SRC submitted evidence of these allegations to the institution? Every single institution has a mechanism of submitting corruption, fraud, maladministration, whatever mechanisms in place. You are represented in management committees. You are represented in council. You can write to... Do you get what I'm saying? I want to check, have these allegations been submitted? Because what I would want, don't want to sit here and talk up, listen to hearsay, reading memorandums of accusations.
Okay.
With that. And then I said two, Chair, this is the last one.
Quickly,
yeah. What would be amicable, because because we want to find a solution, what would be amicable to the student leadership? Because on your last point, you're saying we want an amicable solution, right? What would be amicable between you as student leadership as well as the management of the institution in resolving the issues and ultimately removing yourself from the shutdown attitude and making sure that issues are resolved and academic progress takes place? Thank you so much, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much. Lastly, Honorable Gates and not Gates, let's see.
Thank you very much,
and,
Chair.
Mukach.
Let me first agree with Honorable Nodad and warning students that we will not defend anything or any student that goes around vandalizing, burning buildings there. And when you are arrested, you'll want us to release statements here saying, no, we stand with that. We're not going to do any of those things. So I thought maybe Chair must start with that one, because I know that there are those who are taking former student leaders from institutions of higher learning, because we're told they are too quiet when others are convicted of certain crimes. The second point is that I think we seem to have a common problem in South Africa with in institutions of higher learning between management, councils, and students. I think it's across. And maybe we must do a thorough analysis of what causes these things. And I think on the surface, we must agree, I think, with what Honorable Gates was saying, that a majority of our conflicts between students and the universities are created by greed, are created by those in management who are fighting over issues of protonomics, this tender or that tender. They then include student leaders in their fights. And I think without necessarily having evidence of that, I think we must agree that from the surface there seems to be such problems. And I think maybe Chairperson, we need to zoom in into these things, look closely with all these institutions of higher learning. Why are the strikes, and who causes this conflict? Who stands to benefit more? Because I can tell you now, with the strikes there, there's a security company appointed there, possibly without following supply chain management processes, with inflated fees. So somebody somewhere benefits from all of this conflict between students and management. So it might be something that is created by somebody in the higher echelon of the university to create instability so that their brass, who has this security tenders, without following supply chain management, are then given the responsibility of bringing security that looks like military at this institution. Maybe we must do a thorough investigation across all universities. In that process, if we want to get to the bottom of this, maybe also do lifestyle audit of these officials who deal specifically with these things, your PECs, BACs, in finance, in the top echelon of universities. I can guarantee you we're going to get serious things there. I heard the VC speaking about LNT truck, food truck, that even showed us a picture of it. What was it doing there? Because you are saying, you are told that they got the tender, but they don't. Nobody knows. What was it doing at the institution? Maybe we can assist us with that. On transport allowance, I think you almost touched on it. It's 32 million, over 32 million of unpaid fees to students. Now, maybe let's paint a picture for comrades in management to understand. 32 million, you are probably getting serious interest there. I'm sure if from January, NSFAS says paid in January, I think it was on the 29th of January. You know, if we can check how much you have made in interest out of having that money in your account, you've probably reinvested in it. And somebody who's supposed to be verifying those details of these students is from your, they're hired by you. So they're management. People who are supposed to verify those details. So you have probably told them, or no, move slowly. We're still incurring serious interest this side. While a student who's supposed to travel from here in town to Khayelitsha and back is struggling. So sometimes they even miss class, and therefore they are not able to attend certain classes. So maybe let's make some concessions. One, you must give us a breakdown of how much on this 32 million, how much you've made in interest. Maybe let's take off that money, that interest money, and then they pay off the student debt of some of these students, because in any case, it was money meant for the student, so let it benefit the student. Maybe let's look at how much student debt they have, and maybe let's take this interest that they are making to pay off student debt, because if we don't do that, we are year in and year out going to experience the same problems of this ID number of somebody. I'm sure there are those who are returning students, but we are told their ID numbers are not fine and so forth. So let's fix these things. The money that they are making from interest there, let's put them somewhere. The second last point, maybe they must also give us a breakdown of their security thing there. The company that has been brought on campus currently to deal with these things, how much have they been paid currently? How much, what processes were followed? How long did that process take? Because they seems to be very effective and efficient when appointing security companies. And we're not saying they must not, but they seems to be effective there, but not effective in verifying my ID number. I mean, they are going to pay the students on the 1st of April when some of these students were eligible to get in February. So, I mean, why take so long? It doesn't really make sense. So maybe let them also give us how much did they spend on this security and what processes did they follow in doing these things.
Okay.
The last point is we also need to warn them that this organized crime that seems to be happening at universities and institutions of higher learning, Chairperson, we must clamp down on it. I call it organized crime because maybe, when we had an oversight visit and we visited VUT, we informed the administrator there that maybe the problem is not necessarily changing one person and saying they will fix. They need to be a thorough investigation level by level in this management to check what are the problems. Because some of these problems, they may not necessarily be yours, VC, but they may be created by some elements within the system. So maybe we need to do a thorough, they must maybe send us these investigations. No, the other one,
Forensic
investigations into these universities or institutions of higher learning. Check level by level, where are the problems? Next year it's 2021, we're going to have a strike. The VC says, in 2017, some of these things were there. It's 2020 now, they're still there. In 2020, what have we done to make sure that we don't have these things? The students say they have not been consulted. You are saying you've got a 4x4 that speaks to them. So it means there's a serious problem. It might be self-created problems that we're creating so that some of our people, our friends, were hoping that this year they will also burn a building or two so that my friend who's in construction, management, can come and fix there. So please, we're also humbly asking you, go speak to your team VC. These things must stop. It can't be that every year in and year out we've got the same problems and are failing to respond and plan for to avoid them the following year. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Last member, Honorable Mukar. Can you do it in 5 minutes, please? I know it's been unfair.
Definitely,
on you,
Chair.
But
I think I'm capable. Thanks, Chair, and yes, thanks to the presenters. Chair, I think I must caution us as individuals who find ourselves in spaces where we're leading with collectives not to personalize the efforts that are put into our work, right? So I came and I did and I fixed and I... You work with a team, you work with a collective, and it's we, right? So I think we must caution that particular language from all stakeholders in the room. Then I'd like to say that we must be very clear when we speak about certain things and when we make allegations, so as to ensure that they're not hearsay and to ensure that they are addressed. And that needs to be coupled with evidence, Chair. So I think it's very important that when one looks at the memorandum that the SRC handed over on Thursday, there are many issues that they're raising, Chair, very worrying issues. And if these matters are, in fact, correct, then this institution is in a horrible state. And so to make sure that the issues are addressed, raised by the students are addressed, we need to perhaps advise the student leadership to raise these issues with the South African Police Services, open cases, attach evidence, and CC perhaps the department and the council to ensure that they're addressed. Because you can't run an institution with hearsay. It does not allow for trust to be built because, you know, with a country like South Africa, Chair, where we come from, and as we attempt to build social cohesion, we need to trust one another and believe in one another. So if we all believe that there are people in the system who don't have the correct intentions in the system, we need to point them out and they need to be removed from our space as we try and build our country and to ensure that we protect the gains of our democracy. So, Chair, they must raise those issues they must open cases and attach evidence. I'm still not clear, Chair, with the issue around the 500 allowance processing at a time. Yes, unfortunately, Chair, another issue that the university management has not numbered pages, and continue to say that you need to number pages of your presentations when you come to the portfolio committee so that you can allow us to refer to particular pages when we are addressing you. So when you're saying you are processing 500 at a time,
What does that time look like? Is it a day? Is it 5 minutes? Is it, you know, an hour? How long does that take? And then I'd like to find clarity if the SRC is aware of the interventions by the university to communicate the outstanding matters relating to NASFIS. So management says they're SMSing students, they're emailing students, they've listed a number of nice things that they're doing. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of these interventions? And when these interventions are being drafted, are you part and parcel of that team? Because you would best know how to best communicate with your students. And when the, for example, I think they speak of a day on a Saturday where they want to help students with some of the issues. Are you there as SRC physically helping students to, you know, correct some of those issues? When is day zero, Chair? Like, when is day zero? Because we need to get to a point where the system is actually functional. At day zero from the university management and from your particular cluster that's dealing with NASFIS issues, we need to get to a point where all of these issues are resolved. Violence on campus that's being perpetrated by both students and management is unacceptable. Institutions of higher learning are meant to be microcosms of safe spaces in our community where there is fruitful engagement, where there's a contestation of ideas, a battle of ideas, right? So everyone should feel safe on a campus. And that's the same issue we raise when it comes to gender-based violence. Say it can't be that at a campus, this is where people feel unsafe. So students, I think a lot of people have spoken to the responsibility that needs to be taken upon by students. And if there are people amongst yourselves who are discrediting your hard work, your genuine struggle, you need to be the first ones to call them out. But management as well. When our generation and generations before us, as a former student leader, when we spoke about the insourcing of services such as security, it was not only to deal with the actual rights of workers, but to also deal with the culture, the institutional culture of those particular services. When they're within when they belong to your institution, you are able to train those particular service providers, be them security, to adopt a culture of CPUT. You're able to make sure they go through a training where they are taught on how to mediate conflict and ultimately resolve conflict, because that's the role they're meant to play. They're not meant to play a role where they themselves become intimidating in this space. So perhaps we need to get to a point where we reach, I'm concluding, revisit the conversation around insourcing. In 2015, the state committed to ensuring that institutions of higher learning across the country insource their services. So it's very problematic that you have outsourced security services. I want clarity, Chair, or we would like clarity, Chair, on the students who are said to have lost their placement due to the appeal process delay. Perhaps NASFIS can also assist us there if it's true or not. And I think council must definitely sit as soon as possible so that they can address some of these issues that are burning within their campus. And perhaps we, Chair, can put a time frame as a portfolio committee to say by when do we recommend that council has set in order to address some of these issues. And then just the last one. Chair, I'm battling to understand the relationship between the SRC and political structures. In a sense that the SRC must never forget that it has its autonomy. And you are elected by you are deployees of political structures. And you have this particular autonomy by the Act, right? It's not something that comes from the air. By the Act, to also have your particular autonomy as an SRC, your own identity as an SRC. So I just want to caution it. I understand, I mean, I'm a deployee as I sit here as well in Parliament. So I understand the importance of always being in constant, counsel and, you know, interaction and engagement with your political structure so that you make sure that you are forwarding the mandate that has been given to you. However, there needs to be clarity between the governance structure and the political structure. So that's perhaps all I'd like to say. But, Chair, I think we must commend the student leaders in how they were able to lead their numbers to Parliament on Thursday. There was constant reiteration of tolerance. I mean, to hear a student leader say, even if you disagree, just find a way to channel that particular frustration so that we don't degenerate what we've come here to do. And I think, Chair, we must really, really commend the student leaders to say that they are trying to make sure that that the message that they're trying to bring forth to society on the challenges that they are being faced with is protected, and I think that's highly commendable. Thanks, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. And I must say also that's the feedback that I got, that the protest to Parliament on Thursday was very peaceful, and the students did well to manage the crowd to raise their issues in a manner that does not disrupt public order or ends up in damage to property. So we must thank the students for that. We're going to give management, if NSFAS has got something to say, if the SRC has got something to say, we're going to give them in the next 30 minutes to conclude the issues. You'll decide as the student SRC who's going to speak, but certainly we are not going to allow all of you to speak because we don't have time. No. It's fine. We're quite competent to handle this matter. Don't worry. We will tell you what to do. We'll tell you that we're going to allow you one person to speak, or maybe two. But most of the questions that have been raised relates to the management. And I want management, in your response, please talk to us as to when do you anticipate the shutdown coming to an end. After all, everything else is said and done, when do you anticipate that? There is a short-term solution, medium-term and long-term solution that we want to get a sense as we leave this place that this is what we are going to do, this is what is going to happen, this is what, as you move in, please do that quietly so that you don't have to disrupt us. So as you do that, please tell us the short-term, long-term, the medium-term, the long-term solutions that you as management think must happen for the university to open and for things to be normal in the university. Because ultimately the responsibility is on management to do that. And then we'll come and talk about the other things. The VC kept on referring, the main problem is corruption, but I was waiting in anticipation to understand exactly where corruption is. And then I could not get that. The students were also talking about it, which talks more to the procurement of the services in the university, and there's some allegation there. So those are the issues. I'm sure you've picked up a number of questions. I hope that you can do that. You can address the issues in the next 30 minutes. So maybe let's give you about 2 minutes to decide who's going to do what, to say what. So adjournment for 2 minutes. Maybe just to the student leadership. It's not a public meeting, this one. It's a normal committee of parliament. So we don't just come and howl, and we don't just come and want to say anything that we want to say. We are governed by the rules of parliament here. So members will ask questions. Those who presented must come and respond to the questions. So that's how we work here, so that we are at one page. Okay, so we'll break for 2 minutes, and then after that, management will be ready. The SRC, you must decide who's going to respond on behalf of the student leadership. And then if there's anything from NSFAS, just like that.
Circulated at work. I haven't seen it yet. I also need it.
So, is it in short?
Municipality actually didn't even come in the property to help us remove the rubble from demolishing the structure that was remaining. Because of the wind, there was nothing that could be done. There's a block that we shared. But they didn't know it was wrong, so we literally had to. Calabar. Corner Andrew is next door. Because from. So it was the house from, I think, the next of my store that normally low and then was spread at the middle and I was a chisa about 5-6 houses. Yeah. So basically, as long as the structure is there.
So, what recourse do you have?
Well, the only recourse that they provided, which is also like that temporary structure, so even Patelama nothing. For Ubiatalela, as a matter of fact, Abanye, Makelon, and Service, they give the structures there.
Okay, the VC is not ready. Who's ready to? Who's ready? The students are not ready. The university. So the VC. So he's the only one who's going to answer the questions. Okay, let's get those individuals waiting for the VC to respond. Briefly.
In response to the 65 million.
Okay, continue.
Okay. The allowances that we have disbursed to students to date is 10,008. So in April, we will have to disperse again to the 10,008 students, also including the 3985, which are the students with incorrect banking details. Currently, the team is busy checking if their banking details are updated so that we can include the student in the batch of 1st of April. With regard to the travel allowance is 750, and we have engaged with the SRC that at the time when we were doing our first disbursement of allowance, we could not determine the students that are eligible for travel allowance. And we then suggested that we pay those students or we backdate the Feb and March allowance with the April allowance on the 1st of April, April allowance when we're making a payment. So there has been a discussion from financial aid with the central SRC on the travel allowance that being dispersed on the 1st of April. And to add to that as well, we have to also pay the rentals for non-accredited private body and for accredited private body. The non-accredited private body came out of the discussion that was had with the minister on the 16th of January, where the university were requested to develop and monitor other accommodation in order to alleviate the to avoid the issues of shortage of residents. So with the head guidelines that we received for 2020, initially students that were accommodated into the non-accredited private boarding, they were not going to receive accommodation allowance, which was then, there was a remedy during the meeting on the 16th of January to allow those students to move into the non-accredited and provide the university with a lease agreement. So if you look at the slides that the VC presented, the 1,004 students, those are the students who have submitted the private boarding to the financial aid office. And before the strike started or the protest started, the financial aid officer were busy assessing and verifying all the private boarding documents that we have received so that we can start making payments to our rentals, which will be happening with our first of April allowances. In response to the 500 badge, allowances are not, we are not processing 500 students at the time, but we do take a badge. I mean, the first allowances that we're doing, it was about 7,193 students. That was the very first batch that we dispersed, where we then take our file, we send to the service provider to verify the student banking details and then disperse allowances to students. The 500 is in relation to our office when we are communicating to our students. We can only send 500 emails at a time. So if I have 3,000 students that I need to communicate with, I'm going to group those students into a batches of six batches where there will be 500 emails going, but it's going at the same time. It's just a difference of few minutes that the students, it will be going to the students.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you say the IDs and all of that are being verified currently?
Yes, Chair. We are currently looking at all the students who...
So all of them will be paid by come the 1st of April?
We will be paying all the students the way we have received the updated banking details.
So it's possible that of the 1,900, only 20 can be verified. I'm saying, is that possible?
Yes, Jay.
Can we get a sense of what has been done to help the students to get this information and to have it verified? So that come the 1st of April, all these 1,983 get paid, their allowance. What has been done about that? I think that was the question which we're not getting a sense of what exactly has been done to help the students.
Thank you, Chair. We, like we alluded, the VC alluded to the presentation, we are continuously sending SMSs and emails to students. Unfortunately, the situation on campus had not allowed for further contact with students, but it is something that we are really prioritizing. For example, we've got a team now that is busy verifying students, and those that were unable to verify, we will make further means to get to those students. So we are working on that and prioritizing and wanting to ensure that all our students do get paid, those that qualify on the 1st of April. So it is work in process, that commitment you've got from our side.
Okay, VC?
Yes, Chair. As we indicated, Chair, that we managed to break this since back last year by actually having campaigns. And of course, assist
you manage to do?
To have campaigns, launch campaigns where we can actually raise awareness about the importance of actually updating your details. So we have that, but I think we have to have an aggressive mechanism like we did in the previous year. So I'm actually just adding to what the Deputy Dean of Students is actually saying. I captured that in my presentation. But I think we'll actually ensure that now we ramp it up and we also rope in MCD making sure that now that is actually there and it's actually visible. And of course, we'll also take it up with the student leadership because they've also asked for a meeting tomorrow as well. We have a meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, just pull the mic closer to you so that you can be audible. Yeah. So there's a meeting of the with the students tomorrow.
We'll call a meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
With the student leadership instructions. Tomorrow at 10
we'll be meeting tomorrow to try and find each other. This is actually constant engagement. And so far, there has been a positive reception.
Okay. Chair, can I move to other issues?
To other issues as well. My apology, Nature was actually calling. Chair, let me talk about a couple of issues, and I'll give my colleagues to speak about the rest. I think there was actually a statement that we didn't cover all the items. We were given a brief, and our presentation really was actually based purely on that particular brief with four clusters. So we could not actually cover almost everything. And the issue, again, that I wanted to highlight is the issue of demands. Management was presented with 13 demands, which we answered within 24 hours. And then there were also other demands. Those demands morphed into 20, is the one that were brought here. But I must say that even though they were brought here, the chair of council does not have a copy, even if it was actually addressed to the chair of council. And the secretary to council as well, that was not brought. We only saw that really in social media. So that is now the memorandum that was brought to
We will help, the secretary will share it with the chair of council.
Thank you very much, Chair.
And the university.
Thank you, Chair. The second aspect, Chair, I think you have asked the Dean of Student a pointed question. Allow me to maybe venture into answering that, because that can also be a problem. That issue was actually asked during the interview around the VETS issues, and proper due diligence was actually made in terms of appointment. And that also put forth to her as a candidate in the interview as to really what happened at West University. And that question was actually asked. And the panel, which is the Senior Selection Committee, was actually happy with that. So I'm actually saying people who are actually making that particular statement may not actually be
pretty. Prof, just get to the point.
That's fine, Chair.
I'm
just saying
it
was pointed to her. She may be struggling, but I was in the panel. I was on the other side.
Okay, no, she's here. She can speak for herself.
The next one is that of suspension of leaders. I think that was coming from you, Ntatekete, there. You were talking about the suspension of leaders. And I actually made notes here that all the suspension, as I indicated in my presentation, there were issues of GBV that I've actually mentioned. Yeah. No.
Just a minute, VC. Just a minute. Comrades, sorry. I did tell you that this is not a public meeting. Although it's public, it's open to the public. But it's not a lokhotla there. It's a meeting of the committee where there are rules. And guests are not supposed to participate. Clapping or howling and doing all these things that you are doing. You can do that at a public meeting at the university, but please try to respect here. You'll have an opportunity through the student rep to rebut whatever that has been said here. So please, let's cooperate with us, because I don't want to ask you to leave, because you are here to listen to the responses.
Yep.
If you don't like them, you've got a way of challenging them. Please.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think
I would like to talk about that, the suspension in general, because I was actually saying we have analyzed that. And the second question
I think maybe for us, it would be important that let's get the details of the suspension.
Yeah.
That these are the students suspended, and for this and for that, so that we don't venture into the generalities, you know.
Correct, Chair. Yeah. I think, Chair, the legal office analyzed that. I've got data we can actually forward to you.
Okay.
Under confidentiality. The second aspect, Chair, that I wanted to talk about is the question that the decades you asked pointedly as well about students who I said were sleeping in the library. And you said, how did I verify? I got a list of 29 students here. In fact, if possible, could even project them on the screen. And the reasons as why they could not actually be assisted. And if you read, I'm talking student number 9, for example, never passed a single subject since 2016. Student number 12 also did not actually pass any, so the performance is actually zero. And there are a number of them. Only one passed one subject since 2017. So it's here on the screen, and I'm talking about an information as fresh as yesterday. We're talking about the list that, because you wanted to help, a list as fresh as yesterday, Chair. So it's actually here. It can also be forwarded as evidence. So talking about evidence here is not really a hearsay.
I think we'll appreciate that as well.
Yes, Chair, that can be given. Chair, the rest, I think, my colleagues can actually add, because I think I've actually covered the insourcing, Chair. Let me just, because I said I will deal with that. CPUT insourced. Way back, security, gardeners, and cleaners, we insourced that category. So the issue that was raised in the MOU, it was the issue, and the president has told us, the issue of the monopoly around HG travel. And, Chair...
Around what?
Around the HG travel, a bus company.
HG travel.
Yes. That HG travel went through the normal process, tender process. And, Chair, it's very important to say their term is coming to an end. And it's very important as end users as well in terms of drawing the spec that will have to come together. But I'm worried about the agitation already before even the contract ended. But that process is coming to an end, and there's going to be due processes in terms of finding the next service provider. That will be my last one, and colleagues can actually add on others.
Okay, maybe something that requires you visiting is when are we going to, or what are the conditions that are necessary for us to arrive at the situation where the campus is opened? The short term, the long term, the medium term, and the long term. What would it take between the management and the leadership of the students to find a solution to open the campus? Because you see, we want to live here with a sense that we can also help. If you say these are the conditions that are necessary for campus to be open, we can then talk to that. But for now, I don't think I'm getting that from you, and it's something that only you as an accounting officer of that institution can tell Parliament that I want to open the university, I want learning and teaching to take place. Of course, now there is this dynamic of coronavirus, but these are the conditions that I think must prevail in the institution for it to be open.
Chair, I was actually thinking that Professor Moll, as the person leading the business continuity, will actually talk about that, including the corona one. But all that we're actually saying, our plan is actually to start on the 6th of April when we reopen, because what we have done, we've just brought forth the research.
But we are engaging tomorrow. We are going to continue to engage to ensure that we deliver on the academic project. So I think the detail in terms of us recovering on the lost time, I've actually made a presentation, but I would like Professor Moll to take that particular aspect. But our target here is that we are aiming at April 6th, and we are not going to recess. We're still working with executive management. It may well be that my students are howling there, but the fact of the matter, we are one family. We are going to ensure that we work together, we come closer.
Okay, Professor Moll. Okay.
Thank you, Che. Che, so firstly, I think our announcement regarding the closure of university activities or on-campus activities did indicate that we are closing for the holiday, the April holiday period. And as such, we are currently planning our academic project in terms of realigning it and making up the lost time. We've lost about 9 days. We're also looking at ways of making sure that if we are in any times of crisis, that we can do certain activities off-site and online, which is a trend in a higher education anyway. So I think we have become, we have improved our readiness in terms of online education for certain parts of the curriculum anyway. Conditions for that to happen would certainly be a restoration of law and order and security on campus, which we believe has been achieved. Currently, I think the fact that it has now entered the planning of the university has been the COVID-19 virus. We will be having a workshop this week. We will also invite student leadership to that workshop to plan how that increases the complexity of restarting the university and what practices must be put in place really on ground grassroots level to ensure that we are firstly taking all the necessary steps to prevent the virus from entering our campus. Secondly, if there's any suspicion that it's there, what measures are being taken to contain it? And then lastly, how do we manage the situation? So those things we have already put out an announcement on our news flash, but in terms of the detailed dynamics of it, we're going to plan it this week. We want to still stick within that time frame given, but we're also very wary of monitoring what's happening nationally in terms of the spread of the virus, because we are on high alert that it can very quickly start spreading, and then alternative measures must take place. So from a business continuity perspective, of which I'm the chair, it's very important to develop scenarios and to make sure we understand where we are relating to those scenarios. So it's a complex situation when COVID-19 is also added, but we are trying firstly to get the academic project restarted and then secondly to plan for the coronavirus. Chair, I'm also asked to give you some feedback on the 4x4 task team. And with your permission, I'll also make a few statements regarding that. Chair, so there is a committee called the Management and SRC Committee, which meets four times a year, and I'm the chairman as a designate for management.
Four times a year?
Four times a year.
One per quarter?
One per quarter. With our first meeting at the beginning of the semester, it was the time just after the South call for University South shutdown. Our new SRC at that stage was also for the first time meeting management. So at that meeting, we had a discussion about what demands are there from the CPUT student community. And as a result of the demands that were raised at that stage, it was suggested that we create the so-called task team or the 4x4, which is something that can deal with those matters in real time. And the concept was four senior members from management and four senior members from SRC. So the four senior members from management happened to be myself, the executive director in the office of the vice chancellor, a senior person from finance, and a senior person from student affairs. And then we would go opt as needed. And there was then also four people from SRC, which then became the president, the SG, the deputy president, and the member responsible for student services. We have met ever since, probably since the beginning of February, about every second day. We have a WhatsApp group in which we notify, and we have a rolling agenda of closing out matters as they arise. Some are not easy, some we try to close out, and I'll be the first to concede that somewhere inside the university somebody didn't understand the instruction properly, and then we need to follow up. And when it works well, the SRC is also our eyes and ears in terms of reverting back to us any issues that were picked up. So the first round of the 4x4 task team took place probably beginning of February. It took place for the whole of that month into the first week of March, and it was temporarily terminated by the point where we received a new list of demands, and that new list of demands, before we even responded, erupted into protest and damage to property. And we felt at that stage there's no use that we have this process of continuously closing out matters, and at the same time protests seem to be running out of hand anyway, because this was a measure to prevent us to ever get to that point. So Jay,
but just to interject,
sure.
But why are they protest when there is a platform to engage, the 4x4 platform? Are you reaching a deadlock? Are you not agreeing with the issues? I'm failing to understand. Maybe if you can explain to me.
So, Jay, from my perspective, I believe at some stage there was a disconnect maybe between the SRC and the remainder of the student community, because the only conclusion I can come to was that the student community or somebody out there was not feeling represented in terms of discussion that took place and took the law into their own hands.
Okay. All right, proceed.
Chair, I think that concludes what I have to say.
All right. So if I can understand you on this conditions for opening, from your assessment is that there is relative peace and calm in the university, and that is a necessary condition for the academic program to resume. So the only thing now that will be an issue is going to be the corona virus mitigation efforts and all of that.
Yes, and I think added to the relative peace and calm is also the realignment of the academic project.
Yeah, but
project.
Then I think we'll have to come to the 4x4, because it looks like, as you say, there's a disconnect within the student community, student leadership. Who else was? Okay, madam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for lifting the sentence in the memorandum, which obviously you will appreciate is highly defamatory. So what's stated in the memorandum is two parts. One, that I was fired from Wits University, and secondly, I was fired for gross misconduct. So my answer to both is a resounding no, and I would like it recorded as such. I will deal with the defamation in my own time. So I'd like it to be recorded as such.
Yeah, you see, if you are going to continue with this conduct, you're going to have to leave us, because we can't continue like that. Please. Okay, proceed.
So
you say you were never, what is this, fired for gross misconduct?
Not at all. In
okay.
fact, I received an institution-wide farewell letter, which I just accessed now, thanking me for my sterling work at the university. So I was not fired, and I do not break rules, I enforce rules. So there was no
misconduct whatsoever, and it must be recorded as such.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who else is going to speak?
Thank you very much. Thank you. There were two questions. The one was around the number of applicants we receive of the 7,003 students that were accepted. I wanted to just give you an idea. I don't have the exact figure, but it's around 54,000 applications that we do get. 54,000 applications that we do get.
For first-year students.
Or first-time entering, correct. The second point I wanted to raise, Chair, and I think somebody raised it earlier on, about personalizing issues. And I think that that the names like Professor Mall and Madam Dean, I think that there has to be another way around how we could ask these questions, and perhaps even council could respond to that. But I think, you know, to ask it pat off in the way it's being done, I feel is highly unethical. Thank you.
Highly unethical of what? No, I didn't pick up that one where you say it's highly unethical. What is that?
Is to be able to ask the question, pat off the individual concerned.
Just give us an example of that. Give us an example, because we're making very
statements. Sure, there are two examples. The one example is stating that Prof. Mall has some kind of link with the security companies, and I think there are avenues around how that could be done. And somebody suggested on that side, you could go to the police, or you could report that with the evidence to the whistleblowers and so on, and the hotline. And the second one is to ask Madam Dean, pat off, you know, were you fired from your previous employee? I really feel that's unethical. There are ways in which that could be addressed. That question could have been asked of the Vice Chancellor in your brief to him in terms of his report and so on. Thank you.
You said your name is?
Sorry?
You said your name
My is? Name is Professor Balkaran. I'm the Deputy Vice Chancellor for Teaching and Learning.
Okay. But you know, Prof, with due respect, I don't think we should tell us how we should conduct our business. I think you are now veering off the line now. We're engaging with matters here. We're trying to get to the bottom of the issues, because when matters are brought to our attention, the only way we can find out how is to establish what are the facts. And how do we establish the facts? If there is allegations made against people and those people are in the house, the best way to do that is to put those allegations to those individuals and to respond and to close the matter, so that from where we are sitting, there is no need to investigate any further. So that's the best way to handle the matters. Now, you say to us that doing that is unethical. I don't know, Prof. probably maybe you are thinking that you are talking to your students. We definitely are not your student, and I don't take... Please, I'm really going to ask you, Debens, for the last time, we'll have to excuse yourself. Because you must behave, your students. So, well, let me not enter into that, but I think this honorable members deserve an apology from your side for accusing us of acting unethically. We are asking questions. We want to find out. We are not the originator of all these issues. Now, you coming here and saying to us that that's been unethical. What is being unethical? To ask a question. I mean, the madam here has been accused, and she does say that some of the things borders on defamation, but we are not there yet. Students are raising an issue which is about a factual dispute, whether were you
were you dismissed for misconduct and gross incompetence, yes or no? I'm putting that question to her, and she has responded to that question. Now you're coming again to say doing that has been unethical. I think you must withdraw, Prof, and apologize to us. Please.
Thank you, Chair. So I was merely enhancing the point that was raised by one of the honorable members about using I and we and
I'm
personalizing
that,
it.
I'm asking that please withdraw.
So in that context, I will withdraw that.
Okay.
Chairperson, there was a question about L&T and if L&T is part of a tender process, what are they doing on campus currently? Please allow me to answer that question. We currently have 6 food truck operators on campus, on a couple of campuses, and L&T is one of them, as a temporary measure for us to get to a point where we have permanent, more permanent cafeteria service providers. That tender process went out. And L&T was one of the service providers who applied, who tendered. That process has not been concluded as yet. So the word out there is that L&T got the tender, but it's not correct. It's fake news, it's not correct, and we will gladly supply meeting dates, the tender process up until today, to prove that it is not correct to say L&T got the tender process and there was something, some underhandedness involved. So it is not true. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. The students, who's going to speak on behalf of the students?
Chair, the person that is going to speak on behalf of the student is the SG. It's the International Relations and it's the local housing.
Only one person speaking.
I feel like it's unfair because that's how we prepared the presentation. If you may allow, Chair, I bow on you, Chair.
So you can't have one speaking on your
behalf. Chair, we can't be, that's how we structure our answer. But
let's accommodate you. 3 from the student side. SG, International Relation, and who?
And the residents. Each of us going
and the residents. Okay, it's going to have to be brief then.
Thank you, Chair.
Briefly.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's.
Just switch off your mic, President.
It's appropriate for me to start with the issue of suspensions. I think that it must be clear that the university has lied in this house to say that the only people who have been suspended at CPUT are only people with GBV cases. It's untrue. I'll make a typical example. With Mayilili, he was suspended, not for that, Vanga, Ayaka, Andil, Sivuisiwe, Nam, Snabu, just to mention the few. Those people were not suspended because of GBV. In the ones that I've counted,
what
there are 5 students.
For? Do you know what they were suspended for?
Some of them that I know were participating in Fees Must Fall. Sivu and others that are suspended now currently, they're participating in the current strike. And it's not even on the dates that they are claiming that students touched buildings and stoned cars, those students were served in the morning of the 3rd with their suspensions. Number 2, there is an issue of private security on campus, which is Vita Scholar and Pro Events. We have made it clear to the management that we don't want those private securities on our campuses because, number 1, they are unidentifiable. Some of them even wear balaclavas to cover their faces. Now, they are taking those people to come and protect who? Ourselves? Not possible. Thirdly, with regards to these people, every time on our campuses, there's private security, there's always touching of buildings, stoning of cars, touching that is happening around campuses. Just to make it typical example, the car that was touched was parked next to where they park their vehicles, because our campus has been militarized by those people. They've created a small military base of their own next to control where the securities sit and where the cameras are. Now, how is it possible that a student would by any chance get closer to that car to touch it, get closer to that control building to stone it, get closer to the building that is for dockets, but they are claiming that they have been torched. How is it possible that we can get to investigators? Because all those areas that I'm counting, they are highly guarded by the securities. Then, in our conclusion as students, it just means someone from Vita Scholar and maybe their friends, they've done that, because it would be practically impossible for us to get anywhere closer to those areas that were torched, and they are claiming that they were torched by us. On Monday, when the strike started on AO campus, there were no private securities, and I can surely confirm that there were no torching of buildings. Things only started to go wild when on campus there was private securities. Now, I don't understand what is this notion that students are torching buildings when there is no evidence of us torching buildings. If the university is saying that we are torching buildings, they must bring evidence towards the committee, and then perhaps now they can then start to speak and they can have cases, because it's illogical for us to stand here and believe that our students are torching buildings. In all our meetings, we are always stressing the issue of non-violence in our strikes, because we are always portraying that we are non-violent beings. We only have nothing to even begin violence with. Now, how is it possible that the management would come and sit here and claim that it's us who are touching buildings? It makes no sense to us. Thirdly, on the issue of access cards in the student card form in our university, it's a lie to say that those student cards are only produced for access control. Those people have only been on campus for these few weeks that there has been a strike. Since January and since last year, there has been no system of monitoring who comes in and who comes off security. And we have been raising it as students, but we are not happy that there is no system to monitor who comes in and who comes out of the university. We even asked management to activate the biometric system at the gate so that we can use our fingers or our student card to access the gate. They only brought those people at our gates to come and intimidate us, to require student card, and if we don't have them, they pepper spray. Number two, on the issue of student card, at CPUT, a student card is not free. You have to pay for a student card. You have to pay for a 100 rand for you to do a student card. If you have lost your previous year's student card, then it means you don't have a student card. Now, those people expect us to produce a student card every time when you enter at the gate, of which it makes no sense to us. We have been saying that they must make student cards to be free at any time when students want to do student cards. But now they want us to pay for student cards just in the name of saying that they are controlling access, of which is not true. If they wanted to control access of who comes in and out of CPUT in January, even last year when we protested about the issue of being unsafe on campus, they were supposed to activate those biometric systems to make sure that we are safe on campus. Now it's a lie. They're just disguising to say that they are controlling access so that those staffs can continue doing what they are doing, pepper spraying us and pointing us with guns. So I don't understand this thing of access control utilizing from the management. On the 4x4 engagement meeting that they are claiming that they are working and effective, in actual sense, they are not working. They are ineffective. They are not taking us anywhere as students. We've been raising our frustration to the 4x4 about the decisions that are taken in the 4x4 meeting that are not implemented, and no one accounts for unimplemented resolutions. Now, I don't understand why the management is coming here to pretend as if the 4x4 is the glorious thing that is working for us, of which it's not working for us. We have told them that the 4x4 is low. When we raise the issue of students who are sleeping in student centers, 4x4 knew about it, and it was not working for us. When we raised the issues of students who are unable to register because they are financially blocked, but they are blocked to access their residences, the 4x4 was well aware of that. When we raised the issue of students who are doing masters, who are unable to register for different reasons, the 4x4 knew about that until our rooms were double locked and people were doing postgrad. That's when they started to look into the matter. But the 4x4 is ineffective, is not working for us. Since the first day of our 4x4, we have raised the issue of shuttles. The HG shuttle service is not a new thing. They know that it's ineffective, it's not working for us. But for whatever reason, they decide to keep the company full this much. This thing was raised last year. In 2017, it was raised. In 2016, it was raised. It has been a constant issue, the issue of HG. It's ineffective, it's not working for us. As the majority major stakeholder of CPUT, we are not happy with the service of HG, and we have been raising the issues of HG. Now, I don't understand why the management is making this thing as if it's an issue of tender.
HG is a bus company.
Yes.
Okay.
And we are not happy with their services, and the management is much well aware of what we have been raising. Now, the management is sitting here as if we're only talking about this thing as a tender kind of thing that we perhaps, I don't know what they're trying to achieve with it. With the registration, the Vice Chancellor speaks as if we're the best registration process ever at CPUT, of which he himself knows very well that our registration is a nightmare, coupled with sleeping outside, not having a proper place to pass, strenuous lines that we need to chew to go clear ourselves financially. When as students of South Africa, we have declared that we don't afford education, but year in and year out, we have to go to finance clearance points to explain that we don't have money to pay CPUT. Now, I don't understand why now they're acting as if our registration process is the best process that CPUT has ever produced, or any university that has ever produced. Because even the numbers that he's speaking about, we have to fight and push for some of those students to register and first years to get their responses, because many of them, their responses were missing in the system with no responses. Now I don't understand why when they speak of CPUT has the best processes in place, even with the issues of NSFAS. And what is happening there? We have raised our issues from private voting to disbursement of allowances. Even the testing that they are talking about, they are aware of all our issues that we have raised, even at residences. Now I'm surprised that the university is coming here to present a list that we gave to them last night when our students were sleeping in our students and were evicted by their securities. Now they're making it as if they've been working on these things. But we, ourselves, as the SSM and the student political services, had to fight for them to assist some of the students. Just as two days ago, some female students who are sleeping in the student center who are first years were only assisted. Now I don't understand what is this illusion that they are making as if those 29 students are only failing people. For matter of fact, we know that some of the people who are on those lists did not have a chance to appeal, but they have been denied by the university to get to residences.
You have made a very passionate submission. Thank you for that. Can we ask that you give us the list from your side of students who have been suspended or expelled and the reasons for that, because we're going to get one from management.
Thanks, Chair. That will be done. You okay. Get the list of all the students that we're talking about that the university has unfairly suspended.
All right. Thank you very much. International?
That will be me, sir.
No. You pointed out those who are supposed to respond. You said SG
yes.
And international.
Myself and
oh, it's yourself. Are you international?
No, it's fine. You will speak on that behalf.
please, but we identified three presidents.
Yes.
No. Don't do that. You identified three. We agree. So let's have
yes,
the three.
That's three I'm talking about.
Okay.
Then
international. But who are the three now? Okay. Fine. You pointed somebody there, but if you want to take his place, it's fine. Speak there.
Can I continue?
Yeah, please. Start. Don't continue.
Yeah,
haven't said
start.
Anything. You're supposed to start.
Language, man. Chairperson, first and foremost, please, to enlighten some of the members here. The problem we are facing in CPUT is that the SRC is a statutory recognized structure, and it is not consultation then becomes not a favor but an obligation. Student structures are not, the SRC itself is not consulted in any issues of governance. I'm glad how you highlighted arrogance from one of the management members. Now would one assume what kind of arrogance we deal with in the very same meetings. Student governance is suppressed to a core that the only platform we get to engage on and deliberate on issues we are facing on the ground, the student leaders, are only strikes. CPUT, in fact, is part of the few, if not only, universities do not have student parliament where leaders can deliberate on issues of ground importance. There is a deliberate suppression of student governance. Hence the lack of consultation, hence the increment of deadlocks. Now, second to that, whenever there's a protest, Chairperson, the institution always plays the role of innocence and transparency on social on media, using media, of course. And you can check the response of the VC when it comes to protest.
It's a 7-page response, but the only thing we see is pictures of vandalized and banned things, trying to perceive and perpetuate that students are barbarians. Students don't just wake up and decide to strike. In his response to the strike, we do not see a church, his vague response he gave. We do not see a church, the conditions of residences we are striking for. We do not see a church, the lack of services provided by the shuttle service. We do not. When asked, when the chairperson asked one of the management about the 4x4 meetings, he said perhaps the deadlock is caused by the disconnect between the SRC and the students. Meaning management is never wrong from its side. It always must maintain its innocence and transparent. You read the response of the memorandum. I was hoping it was going to be attached from the VC. The response of the memorandum from the VC when it came to NESPAS, it only gave us two, in fact it's a one paragraph response. We were so shocked even to arrive here to receive a 6-page response detailed with figures, actual fixed statistics of how many students of what have received and so forth and so forth. But we never received that when he needed to respond to the memorandum. The memorandum, he says that it was 9,337 students who have been paid the allowances. But it's here on his presentation is 10,008, which means that the figures now are not consistent themselves. So whenever high authority put pressure on them, it is when then they start to respond. Now, second to that, Junior Chairperson, we need to also iron out how CPUT, the problem is that there's too many captains in the ship. Departments in CPUT are working in isolation. Rest department, academics and finance do not have a coordinated system. When you apply as a student, you are expecting when you're coming from a foreign province, from Gauteng or Western or Eastern Cape, when you're applying at CPUT, we expect that the residence department and the finance department are in correlation. You perhaps know that I, when registered or as a student registered at CPUT, wanting to apply for residence, I must go physically to go and submit my proof of registration at the residence department of CPUT. But it is one department. Today we have students who are appealing for NESPAS. I'm not sure if the NESPAS coordinators know that. We have students who are appealing, but have passed all their subjects. Because they were told that the NESPAS closing date has come. So therefore, they can't be paid the allowances. They need to appeal. Why? Why did it close before? Because registration was extended. And when the academics department extended registration, they do not consult the residence department, they do not consult the finance department. Therefore, you have students who have passed all their subjects but are appealing today as we speak. Now, Chairperson, I think if we are dealing with, I believe management are educated comrades who are equipped to believe in such. Now, CPUT has been having protests of similar issues since 2019 is the only year which we never had a protest at CPUT. Now, how is that correct now if we were to speak of strategic management? How are you tripping at the same spot each and every year? I see honorable members are questioning the numbers of NESPAS and whether it's too much, it is too many students who have not received the allowances. Some of us are not even perpetuated by numbers. We are shocked that we are still dealing with the same issues we dealt with last year. We are still dealing with the same issues we dealt with in 2016. What is management by definition? What do they do in their strat plans each and year in, year out? When the year ends, they must say strat plan. How do we then solve this current predicament that we face this year? Last year, after having a consecutive protest of 5 years, a commission of inquiry was set, Yegiso Commission of Inquiry. I'm not sure if members are aware. To investigate the impact between management and student and all these corruptions of tenders, security guards on our campuses, all those things. Till this day, the report has not been released. And it also raises the question that how do we then move forward if we do not know the mistakes? Because our mistakes and recommendations on how we can move forward and remedy the situation is there in that report. But there is nothing, the report has still been withheld. So hence we are always tripping at the same spot. We find ourselves in deadlock. The comrade there, I forgot the surname, assumed as per the statute that student leadership should be represented in all governance committees. tender committee, SRC was removed previous years back. SRC does not sit in tender committees. The reason why there was a frustration of student leaders when it came to cafeterias, and Comrade Honorable Peter was very clear and articulative there. Student center should belong to students. We should be deciding that this and so forth and so forth and so forth, food is not suitable for our constituents. Such and such and such is not. But management cannot go up behind our back and decide that we are going to appoint this kind of company which is going to provide certain food and certain food. We're never even involved in the committee.
Thank you very much. You said your name is?
My name is Sipho Mokoena.
Sipho Mokoena?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, no. It's leadership. You spoke very well. I like what you say, but I think management was also listening. Because it makes sense what you are saying. That between the different units in the university, they must be able to be some kind of speaking to each other. You know, it's you're making a lot of sense. So I think, but I will come back to that about this 4x4 platform. So that the 4x4 must work. It's a good platform. It has to work for the university. You'll be the last.
Thank you, leadership. Firstly, I must say thank you to the Vice Chancellor and management of CPUT for actually finally coming forth. Although, I must be honest, the presentation put forth by the Vice Chancellor of CPUT is highly disappointing and very much for a person who is a professor to be coming up with such a meatless presentation, to be honest.
Yeah, you know.
Firstly,
let's do this. Let's not be personal and attack each other's character.
I withdraw.
Yeah, let's just get to the point. Raise whatever issue that you raise.
As I proceed, Chairperson.
Yeah, don't attack the Vice Chancellor.
Allow me to proceed, Chairperson.
We've got a duty to protect him.
Noted. As I proceed, firstly, Chairperson, let me touch base on the information provided by the DVC of Teaching and Learning, Professor Balkaran, of the number of students first-time entry that was received of 54,000 first-time entry. On the statistics provided by the Vice-Chancellor of CPUT, it is stated that a number of 6,951 students are enrolled as opposed to the projected number of 7,300 the university is expecting. Are you claiming that out of 54,000 students, only a mere number of 6,951 can qualify and meet the projected number that the university is aiming at? Secondly, it's important that I touch base on the question of suspensions. It's very pertinent to us as student leaders and students of the university, simply because, and we must outline this and it must be recorded, that the nature in which the university works and operates, particularly the executive management, because they operate in bad faith. Now, it makes it difficult for us to even come at such platforms of this nature, because by virtue, now this is based on the historical operation of the university, by virtue of us sitting in these seats, we are provisionally suspended by CPUT. That is why you get questions as to why are we not reporting to Hotline, because we fear Hotline. Even Hotline is going to get us suspended. You've got comrades that have been mentioned by the Secretary General of the SRC. Those are comrades who are raising sharp issues, issues such as insourcing, and it's going to be stipulated in the report where the names are going to come, each and every comrade who has been suspended. Hence, I have to raise it. Now, I will take you back, Chairperson, to 2009. I want to first clarify that one, that CPUT doesn't start having problems now. 2009, Morane Commission, the Vice Chancellor and Executive would know. In the Morane Commission, on 11.5, it says that the executive management sought to expel students to remove them from campus without any lawful basis, therefore. Point number four on the same Morane Commission, these are findings of the Morane Commission of 2009, the university, with the knowledge of the executive management, imposed suspensions of 17 SRC members without a hearing and without any lawful basis. Thereafter, suspensions were lifted by the judicial officer or
on an individual basis without any considered justification. There's a question there. Point number five, the vice chancellor expels students from the university without students being afforded an opportunity of being heard and without any basis in law. Therefore, this step was not corrected by either the judicial officer or legal services. These are things that have been recurring since 2009. I'm going to thank you, Malita. I'm going to move on to the point number two of the memorandum of demands that says that we demand an immediate resignation of the vice chancellor, the dean of students, Mr. Peter Duplessis, and Professor Moll. Firstly, on the one of the vice chancellor, the first issue that we have as students of CBUT is his abuse of power. Last year, in October, there were allegations in media that were circulating that the vice chancellor had been having an unprofessional relationship with a junior staff member of the university whose name was reserved for safety purposes up until it is time for us to come and submit to you without having to divulge in this platform. We are able to provide such evidence, not an issue.
You know what I suggest, comrade, on the issue of the memorandum? We have already said that the memorandum, the council must meet.
Thank you, leadership. It's not an issue. I'll move on.
Yeah, I wanted to wrap up
okay.
So that I can be able to provide the way forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Commander. As I wrap up, on the issue of the Yegiso Commission, it must be known that the Yegiso Commission was a resolution adopted on the 3rd of October 2017. And the commencement of its work was the 1st of March in 2018. You understand? The Yegiso Commission has not been provided to students or even the CPUT community up until this point. Yet we find ourselves sitting here listening to the Vice Chancellor presenting NSFAS stats to us the same statistic, and I'm very happy that NSFAS did not dwell in their presentation because we had a meeting with them in Winebeck where they presented the same stats. You understand? Here, there's a memoranda, there are demands. However, it must be highlighted that we are not going to be enticed into being clouded by numbers of NSFAS allowances. Here, we are not here seeking allowances. There's a major issue, the issue of the tendering process. And I raised this when I was here standing in front of this same building addressing students and yourselves, honorable members. And I made it clear, we want, and in fact we are humbly requesting, the portfolio committee, in assistance with CPUT and as well as the council, ensure that there is a thorough investigation as to who are the shareholders and executive members of Vita Scholar. Executive members and shareholders of Pro-Event Security, because in the beginning of the protest, Pro-Event was the first company to arrive in CPUT. And I'm glad, comrade, you are there because you raised a procurement process and the process that must be followed for a company to be appointed within the institution. Eh? Now, within 2 days, understanding that Pro-Event is not going to come into CPUT and operate and work out as if it's just someone who's been hired to clean for 1 day. There's a process that was followed. They were given a contract. Within 2 days of their arrival, they were removed from campus. Vita Scholar had arrived. What happened to the contract of Pro-Events? And we want to know the amount of money that Vita Scholar is charging as compared to that of Pro-Events. And we want to know what is the difference. Is Pro-Events less favorable to Vita Scholar? Because as people who've done events such as bashes, we know very well that for one night, for security and fencing, Upro Events charges us 46,000. Now, in 2017, after the protest of 2017 of insourcing, the Vice Chancellor himself went on media and claimed that the university had spent 30 million rands on security. That would be Vita Scholar, because that was the only security on campus. And the company had spent 2 months in CPUT. Now,
okay.
If you are to compare Vita Scholar to Pro Events,
let's wrap up.
The clarity must be provided to us as to
what happened to the contract, because I believe someone is benefiting within
all right.
the university.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, comrade. I think let's wrap up. We have had the submission of the student. In fact, the issues are surfacing more now on this than on the original presentation. You can get a sense of exactly what's happening there, what are the frustrations, more than what was done on the. So I'm going to suppress. I see Honorable Nodada, your hand was up. Please, let's just try and give this way forward and see if we can't move on. I think let's agree that we must have a follow-up engagement, that the issues were not sufficiently dealt with today, because there are things that requires follow-up, and in particular the memorandum. We need to get a response of council on the memorandum and engage with council on their responses. I think we require that. There will be issues from management, and I was shown something here by the CERT that council has that management has responded. But there are issues that I think requires the attention of council of that university. Because some of the issues talk about management, so the council must then pronounce itself. And after that, we will have an opportunity then to engage with council. So what I suggest we do, that meeting of council, either a delegation of council or the entire council, must then listen to the presentation by the students on the memorandum. And then on their own, deliberate and then formulate a response to the memorandum. I think that would be fair, so that there is no body who accuses anybody of not having listened to the issues of the students. They are serious. From how I'm listening to the student making the I'm not saying they are it's true, but I'm saying the allegations are serious. And I think that it must be placed before the University Council, and the University Council must deliberate, and they must respond to the memorandum, and we must get that response, and we'll then have a follow-up session. In the meantime, we will get additional information from the students, additional information from management about about the suspensions in particular. Now, the 4x4 issue, it's because I got a sense that management is committed, the students, the people who represent the student leadership, they are not necessarily representing the genuine interest of the students, or there is a force outside of them. But now from what the SG of the SRC is submitting, it looks like the decisions are made, they are not followed up. I don't know whether it's true or it's not true. But one question that I would like to ask is, why is the VC not part of the 4x4? If this is a structure that is meant to be decisive in resolving the problem, why can't we have the VC sitting there? At least when there are crises. When there are no crises, the VC doesn't have to sit in that structure. So I'm going to ask that the Vice Chancellor must be part of the 4x4 meetings going forward, if they are convened. And they must be convened, because I think most of the problems will be resolved by the structure of the plan for enrollment, when registration is taking place, the appeals that are being made, how they are processed and all of that. This structure must be able to look at those issues and resolve. And then the Yekiso Commission, is it Yekiso? the commission report. Would like to get, does that report exist? Do we have, is there a report? Okay. Okay, so we'll ask that council must send us that report. Let me just summarize, VC. We'll have a follow-up session, I think. Let's get this commission report that has been spoken about. And in the meeting of council will then have to look at that and give us that report. There's another Moerane commission. I don't know what's happening there. Maybe we can also get that one as well. And then security pepper spraying. Why is pepper spray being used? Is it as a form of crowd control, or when somebody is walking alone, is being pepper sprayed?
Can I clarify, Mr. Chair? So the incident that's been spoken about, pepper spray, happened on the weekend when the students, and we have photographs and videos of the students being unruly and did not observe the security guard's request because they don't know who the students are, to say, please give us your student card. The students were intoxicated, rude, and really verbally abusing the security. So we were not there to know what really happened for one person to be pepper sprayed.
Okay. Well, I think we must tell the security that it is wrong what they've done. They can't pepper spray. One person pepper sprayed. They must use other means of, you know, making sure that there is control. But pepper spraying one person, I mean, I don't think it's acceptable. Well, it's not acceptable. But, you know, one issue that has been raised repeatedly is the militarization of the campuses. You know, it's highly militarized. I mean, we went to TUT the other day. There was guard of honor by security, heavily armed, and we were walking like entering the building. And one of the members raised that to say, but it's highly militarized. And so we thought that there was a threat of violence. But we discovered that there was no threat. Because I can tell you that in that institution, the SRC is not as vibrant as this one. It's cowed. I can tell that to them. I told the president there that I'm worried that you always took management side. So there was no threat there. We went, we entered, nothing. But the kind of security arrangement that was made was so amazing. And it happens throughout in institutions of higher learning that it does not become conducive, because those are centers of learning and excellence. And we pump them too much security. That's why they end up pepper spraying students. But also there's an argument on the side from management that the students also vandalize property. And we're seeing it happening in UKZN. Millions and millions worth of property has been destroyed by the students. The student leadership says we condemn. Okay, we condemn, but it's happening, you see. And management has a responsibility to protect property as well. But I think there must be a balance there, that it should not be, this university should not be militarized in the manner that they are being militarized now. But we must call on the students, please, please. Members have been saying here, when you destroy property, you invite the security people because you are in destroying property. You are, so they will come, and when they come, some of them have received military training. They are going to handle you in a very rough way. So I think there is a responsibility by all the parties in this institution to make sure that there is peace there. But let's have a follow-up meeting where we are going to ventilate some of the... We will need the Mwerani Commission, we will need the council response to that. My appeal is that the 4x4, let it work. The VC must sit there in the 4x4s. The VC must be the chairperson of the platform until that crisis is, at least the situation subsides, and then the normal issues you can then hand over to DVC.
I'm the chair of the MANCOM SRC committee.
Yeah, but your position in the
acting dean of engineering.
Acting dean
of engineering.
Yeah, I think this thing must be elevated at the DVC level. Because when you say senior, the senior is the vice chancellor, and then the next level of reporting is the deputy vice chancellor, and then just like that. I think that's how it has to be elevated, so that the 4x4 can work. Otherwise, honorable members, thank you very much for coming. We've come to the end of the meeting. Just an advice to the student, next time please, when we are here, we listen. Remember, you can see when you are speaking here, we're all listening attentively. No interruption. So please, just as an advice, it's possible that we can call you again. We expect that, let's observe the decorum. Let's thank the management.
Exigent. On the one of the Yegis, or can we be clear? Can we get, because there are two versions. Don't just want a copy of Yegiso. There is a version of the Yegiso Commission from Judge Yegiso. And then there's the one that is going to come from council is the edited version. There are two versions. It was then changed. It was changed in 2018. It was called the provisional version. Now can we have that one that they changed to, because Judge Yegiso named it the final one and handed it over to council. Council then complained that they had not been given a chance to comment. So can we get the one, the provisional one and the final one? And second to that, just as I succumb, it is clear that the demands, as per the Vice Chancellor's utterances, that they have responded, and it's a pity it didn't give the response to you. We've been called to a meeting, invited in fact by executive management, to a meeting tomorrow at a secret venue they have not disclosed to us. By the virtue of them failing to address our demands adequately, I don't think it is necessary for our safety to be in such a gathering. Thank you, Chairperson.
We're going to allow the Vice Chancellor to speak because you just hijacked the floor. But anyway, we will allow this. We'll not have serious issues, but you know it's not allowed, comrade. But it's fine.
I think, Chair, if we don't comment here, there may be a lot of information that can go out there that is not accurate. I want to place it on record here that the process of commissions of inquiry is a process that is going to be open. In fact, Mwerani Commission, I think it precedes all the people here. I'm talking about 11 years ago, all the people here. But it's actually available, Chair. It's available, I think it's not even embargoed. The second one of the commission as well is not the purview of management. It's at the council level, and the Secretary of the Council is here. And that is also going to be made available to council members. So I don't want us to create an impression here that there is something that is being hidden. It's not accurate. Or there is somebody who is actually implicated and something that is being hidden. It's inaccurate.
Two, three, Chair, before I actually step off, there is a statement that was actually made about social media. I'm not in social media. And whatever is attributing me to, it will never happen. It's only in the question of dreams. And I would like people to desist. Chair, what are you saying now?
Why are you degenerating?
No, it's fine, Chair, because it was actually said in the meeting. I think we have to contextualize that.
Help us.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
You are a leader. When you get criticized, don't do that thing that you do.
No, Chair, it's fine.
Okay.
No,
oh, it's fine.
Can I also say, Chair, that this one that I wanted to mention around the 4x4, the ED in my office, who is a senior person, is consistently part and parcel of that. And the part in short is that we should also say it clear here. In my presentation, which of course they deem poor, one will accept that. We are scholars, we agree on criticism. I said we will give certain figures as analyzed by the legal office. I said in Maine, the cases in Maine are gender-based violence, and of course, GBH. I said so, Chair. And I will put that on the record.
Okay. You have already put it on the record. I think we will get a report from yourself, VC, and a report from the students, and then we will then compare. All the students who have been dismissed. But otherwise, the report will go to council. Council will give us a report. Nothing stops us from calling the person who has been chairing the commission to come to Parliament to give us a report. You see, that is the level of access that we have. So with us, you can't embargo anything because we will ask that it must come. If you don't, we will subpoena it, because it must be public information. So don't even be scared that somebody is going to sanitize things and we're not going to be given the right kind of information, because we can get that. So, but we must respect the internal process. It was commissioned by council, it must go to council. Council must look at it, and then we will ask it from council when we have a follow-up meeting. With regard to tomorrow's meeting, I don't know what is, the students are not happy that the venue has not been disclosed. But our decision is that we must request the Council of the University of Cape Peninsula University of Technology to meet. I'm sure council members are not more than 100, so they can meet. Are they more than 100? No, they can't be. They can be. So they can meet. There is no restrictions of meeting in the next 7 days to consider this memorandum. And the students, of course, will then go and present. Council will deliberate and will give us their responses. but you see, you have to chair those meetings for now. I think it's our request that chair those meetings, provide leadership. At the apex person at the level of management, and then invite whoever you can invite, and once things subside, turns to normality, the delegation from management can continue. But that delegation, I still say that at least have a DVC there who can responsible for students and all of that. Okay, thank you very much. Unfortunately, I'm wrapping up. We will look at things the next time. Members, this is our last meeting for the term. So the minutes will consider it when we come back. It's already late now. All right, thank you very much.